This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, and before we go to our first guest, listen to just a few seconds of Kara Lawson, the head coach of the Duke Blue Devils women's basketball team, in the gym, wearing a t-shirt, looking at her athlete students, her student athletes, and saying this.
I was talking with Shay a couple days ago, and one of the things we talked about was how we all wait in life for things to get easier. Think in your own life, if you've waited for something to get easier. Oh, I just got to get through this and then it'll be easy. I just got to get through preseason and then it'll be okay. I've just got to get through my junior year of high school and then the classes are going to get easier. Or I've just got to get to my spring and my senior year of college and it's going to be easier. It's what we do. We wait for stuff to get easier. It will never get easier. What happens is you handle hard better. That's what happens. Most people think that it's going to get easier. Life is going to get easier. Basketball is going to get easier. School's going to get easier. It never gets easier. What happens is you become someone that handles hard stuff better. So that's a mental shift that has to occur in each of your brains.
How about that? Tom Gimbel, I watched almost all of that video. I didn't get a chance to see all of it. I watched about the first 2 minutes of it. That's really compelling stuff there.
Yeah, I think especially at Duke, where Coach Krzyzewski gets all the credit, when you hear this, and it's a leader that you don't know telling a story about that, you realize that leadership comes in all shapes and sizes and genders and colors, and that there's messages and you got to find them. But I'd say that's the only thing I really like about social media, is sometimes you find a message out there from somebody you wouldn't have found otherwise, and it's very impactful.
John Shire from the Chicago suburbs, of course, is now the new head basketball coach for the men at Duke. Krzyzewski, I think last year was his last year. They sort of co-coached, and mostly Krzyzewski coached, but it'll be John Shire's life gets harder and you better be better moment as well. So do you share that video? Do you like sharing those kinds of videos with your employees?
Yeah, no, we do a Monday town hall where I host a company-wide meeting every Monday at 8:30, and then we have another company meeting on Wednesdays at 11:15, where it's group share. And we'll show, I try to show a different video every week, but doesn't always happen, but I try to. And then at our quarterly kickoff meetings, I always show a couple videos as well. And I think it's important because different things appeal to different people. And for some people, it is the sports analogies. For other people, you know, I've shown The Devil Wears Prada before at clips of that movie. I've shown athletic movies because there are common parallels, though. I've shown war movies. You know, I think the key is you've got to realize when you lead a company or any group of people that everyone's brain is different and everybody processes information different and everybody appeals to different things. But if you've got a bunch of people that don't like sports, but you can show a sports clip like that coach from Duke, you know, somebody who's not a sports fan may never see that clip if it's not somebody like me sharing it. And that's really important. I think too often people think that you only show sports clips to sports people. And that's not right. You've got to open up people's eyes and minds and ears to things that are a little bit out of their comfort zone and let them absorb things they wouldn't otherwise find.
Yeah. Is a common theme in these positive versus negative attitude? I mean, she was saying life gets tougher. And later in that video, she says, so then people complain, oh, life is so hard for me. And she says, life is hard for everybody. You need to get better. You need to get stronger. But it was a very positive message.
Yeah, I really try to show optimistic perspective. And really, you know, one of our key platforms here is resilience. And so I think it's the aspect of overcoming. And to me, that's where life and business really intersect, John, is that it might be a bad manager. It might be that your parent passes away. It could be that your child's sick. It could be that you didn't get the assignment you wanted at work. It doesn't really matter. It's the ability to overcome something and how you compartmentalize objections or challenges in your life and what you step forward to become. And I think that so often, and we all do this. I'm not Susie Sunshine or a Stepford wife. I mean, so often, I don't want to get out of bed some days either. But yet you push yourself to do it, and those end up being some of the most rewarding days.
You're telling me your nickname isn't Susie Sunshine?
Well, they call me Susie for short, or Miss Sunshine. But yeah, put together it is.
You know, Your talk about the use of videos reminds me of a very compelling piece of video I saw, and it was the Run Like a Girl campaign that I think Dove did, and the video about that campaign and about how girls, when they were young, imagined themselves as strong, and if you asked a child to run like a little girl would show energy and athleticism and strength and determination, and then when they hit their late teens, they say, run like a girl, and everybody imitates somebody with their arms flailing who's incompetent. And they said, how does this happen? And it was just so insightful and thoughtful, that campaign, the Run Like a Girl one.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that, you know, advertising today is so different with social media than it was when we were growing up, John. And it was just on, as my dad would call it, the idiot box on the TV.
Yeah.
And how we would go about seeing things and how society viewed it. And I do believe, I think we live in a world that people think that jocks raise jocks. And I've actually seen the opposite growing up in the suburbs, where a lot of times the parents who put the most pressure on their kids athletically were the ones that had the least athletic prowess there was. Yeah. And the message is so crazy to me.
Tom Gimbel is the founder and CEO of LaSalle Network and visits with us regularly. Tom, I'll talk to you next week. Thanks for your thoughts today.
Let's both handle the hard better, John.
How about that? That's the name of that coach is Kara with a K, Lawson, the head coach of the Duke Blue Devils women's basketball team. It's 12:22 on WGN. We're calling Bill Bernard, Deep Watch Senior Director of Security Architecture. This is a guy in the Chicago area we've reached out to before when we have questions about, say, spyware or ransomware, or in this case, Russians hacking into the airports in Chicago. Hey, Bill, you're on WGN. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
I'm doing well, John. Thanks.
Were you surprised to hear that they have that ability?
The ability, no. Let's back up, though. The ability that they're showing is the ability to just make it hard for somebody else to use the Chicago Airport website.
Right.
So, you know, the good news is, I mean, frankly, that's in the scheme of things bad people can do on the internet, that's a pretty easy one to pull off.
Yeah, actually, as soon as I said that, I thought, that's overstating it, because all they did was overwhelm the system. They didn't hack into it, did they?
It doesn't appear so. The group that took credit for doing this has a history now since about the start of the Ukraine war of doing this sort of thing to lots of websites in Europe. Here in the U.S., they've done it to others. They did it to certain states the last week, actually, as they were sort of impacting some of their voter registration sites and things along those lines. And this denial of service sort of an attack really is a lot about making a lot of noise and you know, it's kind of their equivalent of showing up in Times Square to protest, because I can't imagine they're all going to get on a plane, fly to the U.S. and you know, carry picket signs around with them.
So what's the message here, though? Okay, so that was a pain in the ass, but that doesn't mean that the airports or airplanes are less safe, right? I mean, just because it's inconvenient or I can't get on an airport website, what does that prove?
It really doesn't. I mean, the airports themselves would be smart to be going back through their logs today and make sure that nothing else happened. Maybe this was cover for some other thing that might be more important. So they'd be smart to be going back through their logs and their systems today just to make sure nothing snuck in while they were all paying attention to the denial of service attack, much like a magician making sure you're looking at the left hand while the right hand is doing the real trick. So that's one thing to look at, but that hasn't seemed to be the case with the documented attacks from this group so far.
Do you know much about their ability to do something more pernicious, more sinister, either making it impossible to fly or making it unsafe to fly?
Thus far, it doesn't seem like that's what this group is doing. They seem to be in this weird state where they're supporting Russia and Russia's politics, but they don't seem to have any documented ties to any actual government bodies. So it just looks like this is the online equivalent of angry protesters trying to tell us to leave Russia alone.
And are these people in Russia? Are they Russians?
Certainly a part of this group is, with a distributed denial of service attack like the one they performed, they may be getting help from unwitting people who maybe have malware running on their computers, even here in the United States. Or they may be getting help from other folks who don't like the United States or just want to cause some havoc.
Is there anything else we should know about or be cautious about? Is this a sort of a red flag for us in any other ways?
No, not that I would really suggest. I mean, it's noisy. It's obviously scary to think about airports being affected. But this type of an attack is very much more a nuisance. It used to be, it could potentially be devastating to a small business who can't transact business online for hours because you can't get to their shopping cart, sort of a thing. But in this case, those websites are generally pretty much informational. The last time I went to GoFly, I certainly didn't go to the website for O'Hare. I went to the website for my airline, things along those lines. So, no, this really, the good news is this is, as I say, this is really a protest attack more than anything else based on their MO in the past. They've done this to lots of other places since about March across NATO countries, et cetera. And this really just seems to be their thing. Like I say, the scariest scenario here is they were the distraction for something else. Mm-hmm. And it will be up to CISA and the FBI and the folks at these airports to make sure that nothing else was going on while this attack was maybe attracting attention.
Bill Bernard, DeepWatch Senior Director of Security Architecture. Okay, Bill, good to talk to you. Nice to hear your voice again.
Always good to talk to you, John. Thanks.
Thanks for dialing in to WGN Radio and the Wintrust Business Lunch. John Williams here. Ashley Byhun's producing for us today and yesterday. Pete Zimmerman returns tomorrow, after he and his wife went to Europe to run in the London Marathon and did very well. So those stories down the road. We normally connect with Elise Glink during the week. Not normally at this time, though, but we do get to now. She's the owner of Think Glink Media and Best Money Moves. You hear her with Tom Fortino Sunday mornings as they discuss wealth. Elise, have you been engaged in any far-flung travels yourself lately?
Well, I'm actually speaking to you live from Atlanta today, John, where I'm attending the National Association of Real Estate Editors Conference and learning a little bit more about the real estate issues facing our nation.
Is this the first time they've had that in person in a couple of years?
We had one last year in December that they held mostly outside. It was in Miami. Thankfully, we didn't have a hurricane.
Yeah, no kidding.
But this is the first one where everybody kind of feels like it's back to normal.
So what's the word? What are you all learning or saying about real estate?
Well, it's interesting. So every year there are some organizations that give us their list of things that they think are affecting the real world of real estate in the U.S., but also around the world. And one group is called the Counselors of Real Estate, and their president gave us the top 10 issues that he is seeing. And I thought maybe it would be interesting to sort of talk through that list, because while some things were pretty, expected, right? The number one issue is inflation and interest rates, right? And you would understand how that directly affects real estate. Other things that they worry about are supply chain disruption and the energy supply and regulatory uncertainty, things that may not be as apparent.
Are you speaking about nationally or globally?
Well, it's interesting, right? This year in particular, everything that was on the list could apply nationally or globally. Typically, when we get these lists, I'm very focused on North America. They're very focused on the U.S. or even some regions of the country. But this year, things like geopolitical risk was listed as number two. And the things that they're worried about, how it affects real estate in the U.S., but the geopolitical risk could require a tremendous amount of resources, governmental resources, to shift their focus away from fixing things that are wrong in the U.S.
Are other countries, though, seeing their interest rates go up? What does it cost to borrow money, say, to buy a house in France or Spain or in South America or someplace?
Believe it or not, it's even more expensive than it is here. So this week, mortgage interest rates went past 7% for a 30-year fixed rate loan for people who have the best credit scores. And that, you know, that's for people who typically have 750 or above, 760 or above. The problem is the average credit score in this country right now is around 695. So if you're at 695, you're looking at an interest rate that's much closer to 8%. In Canada, we learned, you know, where we're paying $4 a gallon for gas right now, they're paying $8 per liter. Their interest rate is higher than ours, and you have to have a 20% down payment. Very tough to get a down payment of less than that. In England, interest rates are also higher than they are here. And so around the world, believe it or not, it's still less expensive to buy in the U.S. than almost anywhere else.
I have noticed gas prices tick up just a little bit lately, like 30, 40 cents at some pumps. And it's nowhere near $6 a gallon, but it's above three, you know, it's above four again now. You've probably noticed that too.
Yes, I paid $4.45, I think, at Costco the other day. But down here in Atlanta, which is closer to where some of the refineries are, $3.99 on the corner. So it definitely shifts around. If you're in California, you may be paying closer to $5 or even $6 a gallon.
I want to go through this list with you a little further, but you've distracted me enough to let me ask this question. What was travel like to Atlanta? I presume you flew. What was your in-flight and airport experiences?
I did fly, and I was surprised by how crowded it was on Sunday afternoon. I came out a little bit early. The conference started this morning at 8 a.m., but I had some meetings here in Atlanta yesterday. And so I flew in on Sunday, and the first thing I noticed was how mobbed it was. In the middle of a holiday weekend, right? We had Indigenous Peoples Day yesterday, and you would have thought the people traveling for the weekend would have stayed through Monday. But I think maybe it was people in the aftermath of the marathon at Chicago. I'm not really sure, but it was a very crowded experience. The plane was packed in Atlanta. The airport was packed. The only thing that was empty were the streets of Atlanta because here, I guess a lot of people had the day off yesterday.
Yeah, here too. And were people wearing masks much, either on the plane or in the airport?
No, I'd say about one of every 30 people had a mask on, so not a lot. Some of the flight attendants were wearing masks in the airport, just a handful of people. I will say, though, people were respectful of those who were wearing masks, and that was nice. There wasn't, I didn't see any of the hullabaloo that we're watching on social media these days with people getting punched out for making personal choices about masks.
You know, that's interesting because I think one video gets played 1,000 times, and then you get 1,000 impressions of people misbehaving on airplanes when it's really one person. And so I think we need to keep some sort of perspective. I'm always striving for some perspective, like, really, planes, people behave. But if you watch the news, it seems like people are just throwing punches every day on an airplane. That hardly ever happens. It hardly ever happens, but it always gets overreported in the media. Okay, let's pause here. National Association of Real Estate. There's a conference in Atlanta. Elise Glink is there talking to us about the trends and the concerns. We'll pick it up here in a minute. Right now, we're talking to Elise Glink. ThinkGlink.com is her website. Elise is joining us from Atlanta today to talk a little bit about real estate trends at this conference she's at. Are people there, by the way, Elise, from around the world, or is this national?
It's mostly national and Canadian. We have the, I guess there's a couple of people from Latin America, but this is the National Association of Real Estate Editors Conference, and so there are people here from the New York Times and Bloomberg, all kinds of trade publications that cover not just residential real estate, but industrial real estate, commercial real estate, and there's some newsletters as well, people who write about trends and other kinds of things, whether it's in commercial real estate in Houston or it's nationally. So a lot of different perspectives, which is really helpful when you're looking at some of these different issues that affect the way we buy and sell and finance property.
I think the commercial real estate sector is really interesting these days. I mean, you've got empty spaces. Should they be shared workspaces that you go to some of the time or discounted full-time spaces, or should they just discontinue it and find another way to rent out or sell that space? It strikes me as a very interesting time for that arena.
It is. You know, last year, COVID was the number one issue affecting real estate. And if you looked at all of the other trends, it all filtered into it. This year, they took COVID off the list. But every single thing that's on this list is changed because of the pandemic. And so when you look at something like hybrid workforce, which was number three on the top 10 list of things, you know, commercial real estate, it could take 5 to 10 years for commercial real estate to work out what's happened and respond to it. And so what happened in March of 2020? We all went home, basically. I mean, even at the station, you know, they wired up houses and people were doing, you know, as few people as possible were at our station. Well, that has happened everywhere with every type of business. People who can work from home proved they could work from home, and now they want to do their jobs from home. And meanwhile, company CEOs are like, wait, I've rented all of this space. I outfitted it so everybody would feel like they had a new, beautiful, gorgeous, LEED certified space to work in with free snacks. And no, now nobody's coming in. I think we do better. And people at home are like, we don't want the commute. We don't want the expense. We don't want to waste the time. And so whether you come in, if you've got all the space, you're downsizing. We've seen Allstate downsize and move to the city. We've seen McDonald's do it. We've seen other kinds of companies that are smaller start offering different locations, both in the city and in the satellite suburban areas that are along 294 or 53. So that people can come to some sort of an office, but it's definitely not the same thing as having everybody come downtown. And there's a real concern that people will just refuse to do it. Employers are afraid to demand it because they're afraid people will leave and get other jobs. And so it'll take a few years for this to work out.
Yeah, I'm of a mind, though. Maybe it's just my own lens. I work at a radio station where collaboration and being in a studio is important. At least it is to me. Where do you think 5 years from now we're going to be, Elise?
Well, in 5 years, so what most people don't understand about commercial real estate is when you finance, you know, you buy a house, John, or I buy a house, and we get a 30-year mortgage, right? When you buy commercial real estate, whether it's a big building or a small building, typically the financing comes in 5 or 10-year chunks. And so the valuation of the building and the ability to finance it and get interest is based not on your personal credit, but on the amount of space that's actually leased and how much people are paying for that space. And so when those leases come up, that's an opportunity for a building to either be valued more highly, it's more valuable because they're getting new people in, or the value could crash through the floor, and that's when you start seeing these commercial buildings get turned back to their lenders. And we saw a lot of that back in 2008 and 2009 in a lot of major metropolitan areas, and there is some concern that we might see that again unless an adaptive reuse happens. They figure out what to do with these big buildings where maybe they only have 20% occupancy on any given day.
Well, that's it. Does the lender want this building back? I mean, I understand the predicament they're in, but it's still going to be empty. What are they going to do with it?
Well, it's true. It will be empty, but they may have other people who would want to buy it because they only have at risk the amount of the loan that was unpaid. They may have more equity in the building. They can resell that property for less money and get that loan off their books. They can't keep the loan on the books forever, right, in a foreclosure. And so there is this enforced turnover of financing that works, you know, at the market and kind of pushes things in different ways. But there is, you know, when it comes to commercial property, some of the other things that were on the list play a big role, like energy, the production, supply, and delivery. Because, you know, in your house, you might actually be able to have an all-electric house, right? You might be able to put enough solar panels on that's how you're going to heat your water and heat your food and air condition your property. But for a big commercial building, they still need other forms of energy. And so the production, supply, and delivery of that was number 5 on the list of top 10 issues affecting real estate this year.
Inflation and interest rates, geopolitical risk like a war, hybrid workforce, supply chain, energy, labor, the imbalance in housing, regulatory uncertainties, cybersecurity interruptions, environmental and societal concerns. Lots of issues affecting real estate. Elise Glinks, the expert there. Looking forward to seeing you back in Chicago, Elise. Safe travels.
Thank you so much, John.